Blog Talk Radio.
Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. It is July the 1st, 2016. 4th of July weekend lies ahead of us. Hopefully it will be a joyous and happy celebration for Americans all over the country. But overshadowing the celebration, of course, terror attacks in both Turkey and today in Pakistan. And we're going to get into that in a moment. But I first want to thank you for joining me, as you do every Friday, where we can play that game of catch-up and try to put some perspectives in the news, especially where this issue of immigration is concerned, where the campaigns are concerned, where the future of our nation and our citizens are concerned. Those of you, again, familiar with me know that I spent 30 years as an immigration agent. Started as an inspector at Kennedy Airport, did that for 4 years. Spent a year doing the marriage interviews, and then I became a special agent, or as we used to be called in the very beginning of my career, criminal investigator. I started way back in 1971, and I really got to see a huge change in the way that our country dealt with immigration. It was bad to start with, and beyond outrageous where we are today. And the impact is being felt in virtually every challenge and threat confronting America and Americans. And this is not about xenophobia. Let's be very clear. This is not about saying don't let anybody in. It's about saying let's make certain we don't let people in who pose a threat to our safety or our well-being. And that's why we have immigration laws. And on a personal level, that's why we have peepholes on our front doors to try to keep from letting strangers into our home who do harm to us. How in the world this could be referred to as xenophobic or as being haters or nativists? Although the term nativist is interesting, because my understanding of nativist means that you put the citizens of your own country first. And that's not about race. America is ethnically the most diverse country, arguably, on planet Earth. And I don't care what your religion or your race or your ethnicity is, if you're an American, then America, our government, should be serving our best interests, period. And that means making certain that no American should lose his or her job to a foreign worker, and no American should lose his or her life to a criminal who has no lawful right to be in the United States. And the lawful process needs to have integrity so that we don't wind up admitting terrorists and criminals through the front door at ports of entry. And in fact, that's what we have seen almost consistently with this war on terror, so-called, that so many of the terrorists who've gone on to either carry out deadly attacks or attempted to carry out deadly attacks did not run our borders but came in through ports of entry by lying on their applications, by concealing their true identities or their true intentions, and then making Americans, through no fault of their own, pay that price. This is lunacy. Political parties are responsible for this madness. This push for globalism is behind it. This push for greed, cheap labor, lots of foreign tourists and lots of foreign students. Let's get the money from these people. But it's blood money, because people are dying as a consequence. And that's what this program has been dedicated to ever since the attacks of 9/11. When the ashes of that conflagration at what was called Ground Zero landed on my home, landed on my neighborhood, landed on me, my neighbors, my family, and in those ashes were contained the remains of some of my neighbors. I don't think anybody who was in New York City on 9/11 is the same today. I think all of us are suffering a form of post-traumatic stress. I think all of us have witnessed a level of evil and violence that you can't ever forget. But the people in Washington have no problem forgetting, all too many of them. There are some good guys, and I was at an event sponsored by the Federation for American Immigration Reform Fair last week in Washington, D.C. They had nearly 50 radio stations broadcasting from a beautiful hotel. I was very happy to be one of many invited to be there. I met some true leaders in Congress, and there are few and far between, unfortunately. But people like Lou Barletta, who has become a personal friend, he was the mayor of Hazleton, Pennsylvania, when he went to the Bush administration, George W. Bush, and asked for help when a Dominican drug gang set up shop in his once quiet bucolic town in Pennsylvania. It had been a mining town way back when, and suddenly they had homicides, not just one, but several. There were drugs being sold openly in the playgrounds. And when Lou Barletta, the mayor, asked for help, they gave him a full day's worth of dog and pony show. I wonder who cleaned up after the pony. And they handed him a mug. I believe it had a badge emblazoned on it. And they said, "Here you go, Mayor. Lots of luck. You're on your own." Lou wound up becoming a member of Congress. He sits on a couple of the Homeland Security committees. He was sued when he was the mayor for daring to enact those laws to protect his citizens because the federal government refused. Flat out said no. Flat out said take a walk. I was the final witness at that trial. This is the kind of lunacy we're witnessing from both political parties. And Hillary Clinton now promises that everybody who's here illegally, when she's done, will have a green card, maybe citizenship. This is nothing less than an act of national suicide. I know there are people that may have certain misgivings about Mr. Trump. He's a little bit brash. He's not nuanced. There's lots of complaints. I get it. But I have to tell you, when I look at Hillary Clinton, there is no choice. You have got to understand that Trump is our only hope. Only hope. Because if Hillary is allowed to carry out what she promises, or more properly threatens to do, we're done. We're finished. Because what most people don't realize, is that if, in fact, as I suspect, rather than 11 million or the head of Immigration and Customs Enforcement recently disclosed, she thinks there's 15 million illegals in the country, I'm willing to bet there's at least twice that number, at least 30 million. And what we saw when Ronald Reagan gave us the first amnesty, there you go, another Republican who did not act in our best interest. And I know some Republicans give Ronald Reagan a pass, and they say, well, he said it was a mistake. I wish I could believe that. I don't. Reagan, as commander-in-chief, knew that we got into the problem of having illegal aliens because of a lack of resources to enforce the law. And when you don't enforce the law, people will violate the law with impunity. So he saddled the old Immigration Service with this employer sanctions law, which, by the way, I think is a good thing. Punish people who could be shown to be knowingly hiring illegal aliens. And then if you look at the way the law is written, it's easy as an employer to be prosecuted. For all the ranting and raving of the Republican side, let's have less regulation. If you scrutinize a new employee's documents too closely or ask to see something beyond what they show you to make certain that you're really hiring someone entitled to work, case in point, if you hire someone and the guy says to you, yeah, I'm a citizen of country X, I don't care, Canada, England, Germany, whatever. I don't have my alien card with me today, but I do have my driver's license, I do have my Social Security card. And you fill out the I-9 for that employee that you've just hired, and he's on the clock or she's on the clock. And then if you say to that person, you know, I want to really make sure that you're entitled to work. I know you've got a Social Security card. I know you've got a driver's license. I know that's what's required on the I-9 form that we have to fill out. But you know what? Stop by when you get a chance. I really want to see that alien card. If you could go home and see if you can't find it, because I just want to be careful. I feel strongly about not hiring somebody who shouldn't be working here. And by the way, if I hire someone who's not supposed to be working here, I can be penalized. And they just increased the penalties, from what I understand, within the past couple of days, so that the fine goes up. You can even face criminal prosecution. So I'm just being careful. I want to be a good employer. I want to be a good American. All I want to do is see your green card. It may sound reasonable to you, but under the law that Ronald Reagan gave us, what you've now done is violated that person's civil rights. you can be prosecuted for it, and you can be sued by your new employee who can claim that you are now requiring more of him than the law requires, and that perhaps you did so because you are biased. And that is in the law, folks. So please, let's not give any party a pass. We are in this mess because of both the repugnant cans and the demoncrats, as I call both parties. This is a mess. It's a mess, and we have millions of people working illegally in the United States while we have well over 90 million Americans of working age who are not part of the labor force. This is nuts. This is sheer lunacy. The immigration laws used to be the bailiwick, the responsibility of the Labor Department. That's how we built America's middle class, by making certain that American workers would never have to compete with a foreign worker for a job. And that's important for two reasons. Number one, obviously, to make sure the American gets the job. But if you start to bring in from third world hellholes, there are people so desperate around the world that they will come to America and work for a very low wage, and not just, by the way, menial jobs. We're seeing it in the computer industries. They will work for a very low wage with a minimum of working conditions, often illegal working conditions. And so what that does is to drive down wages for American workers. And it's in the law that this isn't supposed to happen. So when you have the parties, both left and right, the Democrats and Republicans, saying, oh, we want to reform the immigration laws, they really mean it. They want to reform, as in remake them. And they want to remake them so that Americans will not face any protection from foreign competitors. And in fact, Alan Greenspan testified for Chuck Schumer about that very point. Made that point that he said, you know, we've got to stop shielding those American workers, the high-tech workers, the highly skilled, which is how the law refers to them, because we've made them into a privileged elite. He said this on April 30th, 2009, at a Senate Immigration Committee hearing. And in fact, I've written about it extensively. So while we're talking about my having done a lot of writing, take out your crayon if you're not familiar with my websites. My own personal website is michaelcutler.net, C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. Also, for many years, very proud to be a senior fellow. I do a lot of writing for a great group out in Santa Barbara, California, my good friends at Californians for Population Stabilization. CAPSWeb.org is their website, C-A-P-S, CAPSWeb.org, if I can get the words out. I am also a columnist for Front Page magazine. Front Page is the creation of the David Horowitz Freedom Center. I'm very proud to be writing for them. I also write articles for The Social Contract. I have been a man on a mission to try to wake up Americans. And there's also a wonderful website that's been fired up by Jamie Glazov, the Glazov Gang. And I do videos through the miracle of Skype periodically. My latest one that I would love for you to go see is about terrorism and immigration. What an apropos topic given the news of the day with that terror attack unfolding in Pakistan, where very much the attack at Turkey at the airport is very much in everybody's mind at Ataturk Airport. You know, we're living in a dangerous era. We're living in a dangerous world. And you would think that our government would put the lives of Americans ahead of everything else. You would think. You would think, wouldn't you? And yet we're not. And again, the open borders anarchist will say, oh, it's xenophobic. We can't not let people come in. Well, I want to know if those folks leave their doors open at night so that people could just wander in. Because, I mean, after all, it's kind of hard to find public restrooms sometimes. You might get thirsty. It might be a little too warm outside or a little too cold outside. Maybe it's raining. I mean, how miserable would they be to not leave their door open so strangers could just wander on in and maybe grab a snack while they're at it, you know? I mean, this is madness. Countries are defined by their borders. When you think back to the way that we studied history in school and geography, we define countries by their borders, by their resources, what their neighboring countries are, And a point worth making that's often not made, most borders on the map weren't just arbitrarily, you know, some guy didn't come along with a magic marker or one of those machines they use to put lines in the highway and say, yep, here's a line, let's make this the border line. Many borders of the world were written in blood, because many borders were arrived at as a resolution to war and conflict. People take borders very seriously. People take property lines very seriously. Go out and buy a piece of land, buy some property, buy a house. Before the bank will give you a nickel, the first thing they do after they check for liens is to send out a surveyor. Now, why do they send out a surveyor? To make certain that your property lines are where they're supposed to be, that your building doesn't exist on someone else's property line. That's the way we do business as human beings. We draw lines, and they aren't lines in the sand, I can tell you. And when you look at the White House or the governor's mansions or the mayor's home in most cities, those buildings are protected by fences and armed guards. Somehow there, the line is appropriate to enforce. But when we ask our country, please don't let people in that are going to take my job. Please don't let people into the country who might have a dangerous disease and maybe make me or my children sick. Please keep the terrorists out of the United States. Keep the criminals, keep the drugs out of the United States. That's what we're asking for. And you have members of Congress jumping up and down screaming about how this is hate speech? The immigration laws make no distinction about race, religion, ethnicity. If they did, I could never and would never have enforced those laws. My family was decimated by Hitler in the Holocaust. I was named for my grandmother, who was slaughtered in Poland because we're Jews. The laws of the United States don't make those distinctions. And if you go to Title 8, United States Code, Section 1182, and this isn't going to be a law lesson, but this is verifiable, look at the categories of aliens who are to be denied visas. Aliens with dangerous communicable diseases. Let's remember Ellis Island, that we hear so much about by the breastfeeding open borders anarchists, was a quarantine station that was operated by U.S. Public Health in conjunction with immigration authorities. Aliens who have dangerous mental illness issues, or violent, or sex offenders. Again, this was something they looked for at Ellis Island. And then we get to aliens who are criminals, murderers, bank robbers, drug dealers, human traffickers, drug smugglers, gun runners, arsonists, you know. Aliens who are fugitives from justice, or previously deported, or espoused terrorist human rights violators, or war criminals. Those are the categories. And then we get to aliens who would likely become a public charge, or aliens who are coming on non-immigrant, that is to say visitors' visas, and are likely to illegally work in the United States, thereby competing unfairly with American workers who are similarly employed. That's what the laws are about. This isn't about any color of skin or anything else. What is unreasonable? And the language being used to describe anybody who would dare say, let's exercise some common sense. Let's put Americans first. If there's any hating being done, it's the open borders anarchists who hate America and Americans. If there's any hatred, that's where the true hatred lies. Because anybody with a half a brain says, let's protect our country. We send our young men and women in harm's way as members of the United States military, and what is, after all, their primary mission? Folks, their primary mission is to stand between us and those who would kill us, to keep our enemy as far away from us as possible. There's a Navy ad, and it's very inspirational. You know, you get goosebumps, and I'm a huge fan of the military. Although I never served in the armed forces, I did serve America as a federal agent. My dad's brother served in the Army Air Corps during the Second World War. It became the Air Force, and then he went back as a captain in the Korean War, again for the Air Force. I've had the privilege, through a speaker's bureau, Alan L. Freed Associates, of addressing seminars that they conduct for the military as well as the intelligence services. And I am in awe of our men and women of the armed forces. This is something I feel very strongly about. We all should. They're the ones who stand between us and oblivion. So the Navy does this ad, you know, and you see a growing circle of naval personnel wearing all sorts of uniforms, all sorts of gear, pilots and divers and submariners and so forth. And they say, to get to you, they got to get through us. That's the mission of the military, to stand there and hold that line just as the Border Patrol is supposed to hold that line along our northern and southern borders, and the Coast Guard holds that line along our 95,000 miles of coastline, and the inspectors, the job I did for 4 years, hold that line at that international airport, because that is also where our border is to be found. It's not just the Mexican border, and it's not just the Canadian border. It's also at every one of our 328 ports of entry, many of which are international airports. It's to make certain that our enemy can't come here and kill us. It's a very simple mission, at least in concept. Not hard to conceptualize, except for people who don't give a damn about Americans, who have an agenda, who are greedy. So when Americans die, I guess then we're just collateral damage. There was a recent hearing. Congressman Steve King had quoted me at the hearing, and I've done many congressional hearings before both the House and Senate. But in fact, I had the opportunity to be with Steve King and Jeff Sessions, as well as my friend Lou Barletta, when I was in Washington, and I had a conversation with Paul Gosar from Arizona. And these are guys that are trying to do the right thing. Jeff Sessions, my goodness, is truly heroic to me. The guts he displays in standing up to his own party. I'm proud of the fact that he's quoted me from the floor of the Senate when I referred to comprehensive immigration reform as the Terrorist Assistance and Facilitation Act. And Steve King noted that when I had testified at a hearing years ago, he had asked me if I knew how many people lost their lives every year to illegal aliens. And I said to him, Congressman, I don't know that number, but I could assure you it would be a multiple of the number of people who perished on 9/11/2001. And he said that that answer so shook him up that it caused him to request not one but two studies be done by the General Accountability Office. And it was one of those moments when I hate to be right. I wish I was wrong, because they found that I was right. And I remember a while back, a couple of years ago, Steve King held a news conference and said that there were at least 7,000 people per year killed by people who shouldn't be here. 7,000 people per year. 3,000 people killed on 9/11. A few people get killed by cause that suffer unintended acceleration, and Congress holds hearings, and they should. I mean, we should know what's going on. Now, Tesla, one of their robot cars, apparently is responsible for the death of a motorist. It apparently could not see or could not recognize a truck, and it created a fatal accident, pretty terrible. And God knows, they'll probably want to have a hearing because one person died. And look, every life is precious. Certainly Stalin is a rough guy to want to quote, but he did say something that's worth quoting. He said, a million deaths is a statistic, one death is a tragedy. So anytime there's a loss of life, we should be concerned. We should be very concerned. But I find it more than ironic that when there's a mass shooting and a dozen people die or 15 people die, and all of a sudden the clamor is for gun laws, which make no sense, by the way. I don't want to see guns in the hands of criminals. I've taken many, many guns off the street that were in the possession of criminals, of people involved with terrorism, or people involved with narcotics trafficking, a very violent business. A business, by the way, where we have the president releasing what he calls nonviolent drug offenders. Precious few nonviolent drug offenders to be found on the federal level. You can find them on the city or state level, sure. The guy that's got a couple of joints in his pocket, the guy that's got some pills in his pocket and he shouldn't have been carrying them. No weapon, no violence. Yeah, he's nonviolent. But in order for the feds to agree to prosecute a case, we hear so much about prosecutorial discretion, you have a pretty high bar that you have to meet. Huge quantities of drugs and other crimes, usually violence, extortion, guns, and so forth, money laundering, which isn't violent, but again, it's a crime. And so very often they're allowed to plea bargain away one or two of the charges, so they agree to take a guilty plea rather than go to trial. And that's why 90-odd percent of all convictions are not the result of a jury trial, but a guilty plea. So there's lots of horse trading that goes on. It's part of the process. I became very used to it as an agent. And I spent half my 30-year career involved with the Drug Task Force. I spent 4 years first agent assigned to the Unified Intelligence Division of DEA, the Drug Enforcement Administration. And for 10 years, I was with the Organized Crime Drug Enforcement Task Force as a senior special agent of the INS. I had a desk at the FBI and DEA and ATF, and I saw this every day. And in New York, for example, if you go to a U.S. attorney and say, we caught a guy with 10 kilos of cocaine, they're going to laugh at you. They're going to say, go down the block. Go see the state prosecutor. We can't be bothered. So you have Mr. Obama now releasing drug dealers into the communities. What could possibly go wrong? We're told our borders are secure. The real metric for border security has nothing to do with those lies that pass for statistics. It's the price and it's the availability of heroin and cocaine. Because we don't produce a gram of heroin or a gram of cocaine inside the United States, and those substances are illegal. Illegal. Not to be held in anyone's possession. Possession of those drugs is a crime, period. So the only way those drugs can come into the United States is if they're smuggled into the United States. They're brought across borders, the Mexican border, the Canadian border. They're smuggled in the holds of ships and cargo containers. They are smuggled in cars that people drive across the border and go through the inspections process. They're brought on board airplanes as cargo, and people that are so desperate that they swallow the drugs in condoms or balloons, and they race the clock and hope that that balloon or that condom won't burst before they can get to the house where they're to be divested of the drugs, because if it bursts, they die. We've had people taken off of airplanes when I was an inspector at Kennedy Airport who had died en route to the United States because of a condom or a balloon or whatever they had stuffed the drugs into their abdominal cavity had ruptured before they got to expel those drugs. So this is what's going on. And the drugs have never been more plentiful. This is why we have a heroin epidemic that has become the scourge of neighborhoods across America. And if you want to talk about violence, that's where the violence is. The gangs, the drugs, that's what fuels the violence and the destruction of the lives of Americans, especially young people. So for all the talk, oh, we're going to help you out, we're going to give you a free college education. Yeah, well, you'll be able to do bupkis with that education for the most part, because we've got people coming in from India that are undercutting American high-tech workers. You have people that are looking for the lowest common denominator, firing Americans, hiring foreign workers. They tell us we don't have enough American workers, but guess what? They're firing hundreds of thousands of American computer programmers, even as these companies go to the Congress and say, see, we have a shortage. Disney, I wouldn't go to Disneyland if they paid me. In fact, when I was at Hold Their Feet to the Fire, there was one guy, and it broke my heart to hear the story. There was a time I was friends with a bunch of computer programmers. My late wife, my first wife, was a programmer. She was about to become a vice president at the company that does backroom work for both the American and New York Stock Exchanges. So I got to meet many programmers. These were very bright people. We had dinner together. And they were really dedicated to their job, and they worked all kinds of crazy hours around the clock because data processing is a 24/7 job, just like law enforcement. And they were paid well, but they should be for their talent and their efforts. And this one guy had worked for Disney, and he talked about how he had just gotten an evaluation where he got everything perfect. His evaluation could not have been better. The bosses shook his hand. Great job. You're fabulous. You're amazing. And then he talked about how a couple of weeks later, Disney issued a statement to everybody about how their profits had never been higher. Congratulations, we couldn't have done it without you. And towards the end of one particular day, their bosses called all these guys together, this gentleman included, and said, hey, guys, don't go anywhere. We're going to have you step into the conference room in a little bit, so just hang out. Well, everybody was convinced they were about to get a bonus. They all had great evaluations. They were all told what a fabulous job they did. They were all told that because of them, Disney's profitability went through the roof. So imagine you're sitting there waiting to hear you're getting a bonus, and you're all excited thinking, wow, maybe this is the year I get a new car. Maybe this is the year I surprise my wife with a new refrigerator or a new dishwasher. And they're called into the conference room, and they're told they're being fired. Fired. Their world just got yanked out from under them. Fired. Oh, and by the way, we're going to give you a nice severance package, so that should make you happy. But if you want that package, you're going to train your replacement. This is what Hillary Clinton stands for. And you should know, and I don't know why it's not out there in the public realm, but it's on her website. I haven't checked lately, but certainly a month ago it was. The Clinton Foundation that is under investigation has partnered with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Yes, that Gates, the Microsoft Gates, to look out for girls and women around the world. I guess the hell with girls and women in America, and don't even mention boys or men in America. This is the woman who would be our next president. And I have to tell you, and I'm a lifelong registered Democrat, I could never, ever even imagine voting for her, period. This is insanity. It was Gates who went before the Senate and said, we need to bring in all these foreign workers. We need them to help us be successful as they're firing their Americans. And it was Gates that Alan Greenspan quoted on that day in April 30th, 2009, when I watched that hearing of betrayal against America, Americans, the American dream, and it's destroying our economy because the people who come here from other countries send money home. And I don't blame them one bit. If I could go to Canada and make 10 times what I could make in America, I'd be on my way to Canada tomorrow morning. But this business of the money being wired out of the country is looting our economy. Looting our economy. We're losing hundreds of billions of dollars per year in remittances. And then you've got to look at what this means to American wages. When we take American families who had been middle-class tax-paying consumers, and overnight, through no fault of their own, we turned them into people who live below the poverty line, who perhaps lose their homes to foreclosure. And instead of paying taxes, they come to depend, again, through no fault of their own, on those very costly safety net programs, food stamps, housing subsidies. Why? Because they can't get a job in their chosen profession. And when you're in your 40s or 50s and you're fired, believe me, you're not going back into that old profession. You are now a dinosaur, and they would much rather hire some kid out of college, or better yet, somebody from India, which is what this is all about. And then you had Joe Biden, the vice president, when he spoke at Northeastern University, telling the students there that he was thrilled that there were students graduating from 85 countries, and that we must not hide behind walls, and we must not look inward, but we should look at the success of India in building its middle class. We should look at China, at its success in building its middle class, even as China builds its nuclear navy and guided missile cruise ships, guided missile cruisers, which are war ships. How many of their engineers do you think perhaps were educated in the United States who worked on those machineries of war? We have nearly a 500,000 foreign students studying science, technology, engineering, and math in the United States. We have everybody coming here, and part of the problem is that not only are we training the people that are going to build war machines that may one day confront our sailors on the high seas or our pilots in the stratosphere, but they're learning how to hack our computers, and we've been educating people who come from countries that are hostile to America. We still have Iranian students in the United States. You know, this is the lunacy. And now let's turn our attention to what just happened in Turkey. And this is really important. And by the way, there's a couple of articles I want you to check out. And if you go to the radio website, you know, Blog Talk Radio, you'll see these links. But it's, first of all, on June 27th, Front Page Magazine published my article, Terror Investigation Obstructor Nominated for Secretary's Award for Valor. Believe it or not, this woman, Irene Martin, blocked ICE agents from entering the facility where her people were adjudicating applications. Enrique Marquez, the guy that was alleged to have provided the guns to the two shooters in San Bernardino, was supposed to show up for a hearing the day after the terror attack. And the concern was, number one, that he had already committed a bunch of felonies. He was an accomplice to mass murder. But the other concern, and the OIG report, the Inspector General Internal Affairs report, bore this out, that the other concern, as I had surmised before I even saw it in the report, was the concern was that he might have provided more weapons to more people and more attacks might be happening. So they wanted to get to him quickly to find out if there was going to be another attack. They were blocked from entering the building by this woman, Irene Martin. And I wrote an article, they didn't have the name at the time as to who the person was, but it came out because of the investigation that was done. And I said whoever did this must have been trying to get the MVP, the Most Valuable Player Award, from ISIS. Well, in fact, in a manner of speaking, this person was given the MVP award, but not from ISIS, but from the administration, because she has been nominated to receive the Secretary's Award for Valor. And that's the award that is given to government employees who put their lives on the line to protect someone else, whether they're on duty or off duty. It is a very important award. It is very significant. And it's about demonstrating heroism in the face of what might be your own demise. She got that award from this administration when the Inspector General said that, number one, she obstructed the investigators, the agents who were working with the Joint Terrorism Task Force. She could have cost many people their lives had there been a second wave of attacks coming. Think about that. And then she lied when she was questioned. So she's getting the award for valor. In the twisted world of Mr. Obama, I'm going to guess that the fact that she stood up to armed federal agents was an act of valor. God only knows. God only knows. It is impossible to know. Because when Fox News filed a Freedom of Information Act request to learn why she was given an award, and usually, whether it's the military, whatever it is, with the exception of the CIA because of the nature of their work, stars on the wall of the people who were killed with no names, you know, and you'll never know where they were, what happened, but the family certainly knows why that star is on the wall. But she didn't work for the CIA. She was an adjudications manager. I did that job. And the answer as to why she got the award, no comment. So they're giving her an award, and I'm sure there's cash involved, for doing what? Where was the valor? Where was the valor in obstructing federal agents trying desperately to prevent a terrorist attack and then lied to the people who questioned her, which, by the way, is a felony? You know, a long time ago when I was hired on and I went through the academy, they said, you know, if internal investigations, if the inspector general ever interviews you, you certainly have the right to not answer questions. But if you take that action, if you go down that road of saying, I'm invoking the Fifth Amendment, I'm seeking protection under the law to not have to talk to you, they said, you better be prepared to hand your badge over because it is a certainty that you will not leave the building with that badge in your pocket. You will be fired on the spot. You don't have the option of keeping your job after you plead the Fifth. Well, this woman went one step further. According to the OIG, she lied. And now she's getting a prestigious award that blows my mind. What can I say? I wrote an article for capsweb.org, and really this is so on point today. The title of my article, Multiple Immigration System Failures Undermine National Security. And finally, Front Page just yesterday published my article, Loretta Lynch's Private Meeting with Bill Clinton Prior to the Release of the Benghazi Report. And unless you've been sleeping under a stone somewhere, we all know about that fiasco, how the Attorney General allowed Bill Clinton to come on board her private jet to have a 30-minute conversation. I'm just going to say something quickly, and then I want to get to this issue about the nexus between terrorism and what happened in Turkey, because there's a very clear nexus here. Believe it or not, not our immigration system, but their immigration system. But this is a universal issue. It's not just limited to the United States. But I have to recount the story, and I wrote about this in my article for Front Page Magazine. I used to have a boss many, many years ago when I was a young agent. And although I referred to him by his first name here, I only started to call him by his first name after he had retired. But when I worked for him, his name was Mr. Johnson, Frank Johnson. And Frank actually was a naturalized citizen. We used to tease him about it. He was from Canada originally. And he was a button-down sort of guy who held us, held himself, rather, to a standard higher than the standard he held for us, which is what leadership is about. And he used to puff away on his cigarettes, and he always wore these starched white shirts. You know, you knew that no matter what the day of the week was, he was always going to wear the same color shirt, and it was starched white. Real straight shooter. And we used to have payday meetings every other week, because back in the 70s, there was no such thing as direct deposit. You stood in line, and the secretary for the squad would hand you your paycheck. You would sign for it, and then you'd be allowed to go out for 15 minutes to deposit your check in the bank around the corner. And every day, every time we had one of those paydays, we had payday meetings. It was an opportunity to bring all the agents together under one roof so that the bosses could tell us about any changes in policies or procedures. They could fill us in on anything that we were supposed to be looking for, mandates from Washington. You know, we didn't have email, so this was a convenient way to do things the old-fashioned way. We actually had face-to-face conversations, and again, we didn't have email, so if some agent was looking at a particular gang or a particular pattern, or they were trying to put a criminal investigation together, they might tell us, look, we know there's a lawyer who's been involved in arranging marriage frauds. This is the guy's name, and we know that most of these frauds involve a notary or a clergyman or whatever by this name. So if you encounter aliens in the field and they claim they're married, find out who the attorney is. I want to review that file because there may be more potential defendants and witnesses out there and that sort of thing. So we would swap information at these payday meetings. And he always concluded that meeting puffing the cigarette and jabbing it in the air to add emphasis to every word that he was trying to get across to you. And he would always end the meetings by saying the same thing. As federal agents, it's not enough that we not engage in wrongdoing. We must never even give the illusion of doing wrong. And there was an incident where I was sitting in a restaurant shortly after I hired on as an agent, and I had already been an adjudications officer, so I knew some of the attorneys because they would accompany their clients for their interviews. And I was sitting in a restaurant across the street from my office, finishing up. I was sitting at the counter. A lawyer who was sitting elsewhere slides over next to me and says, "How are you, Mr. Cutler?" He shakes my hand and starts just chatting with me. And I thought this was kind of strange. I was a little bit uncomfortable. Didn't want to be impolite. I was finishing my dessert. One of my bosses walking by happened to peek into the restaurant, saw me sitting next to this attorney, came into the restaurant, whispered in my ear, "Mr. Cutler," he said, "when you're done with your lunch, you report directly to my office. I need to see you immediately." Well, that was the end of my dessert and my appetite. I realized that I had a problem. So I quickly paid the check and headed back upstairs. And this guy chewed me out for an hour. And he said, "Why in the world are you sitting next to an attorney who represents people that you arrest?" He said, "Do you know what that looks like?" And I said, "Well, I was just sitting there minding my own business," and he slid over to me. He said, "That's fine. Then you had a choice. You needed to tell him that it's not appropriate for you to be seen eating with him, or you needed to leave, whether it meant taking your dessert to go or just leaving it there." He said, "Because you could ruin your career by ruining your reputation by having lunch with a defense attorney, and you're a federal agent." He said, "Do you understand the implications?" I said, "You know, none of his clients are people that I'm dealing with at this point." He said, "It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter." He said, "I understand that you didn't do anything wrong, really, but from now on, this is the way you will conduct yourself, because you are creating an appearance that is unacceptable. People walk by, They see an immigration agent having lunch with an immigration lawyer. Bad news. Nothing good can come of it. Now, I was just a brand new agent, and I was admonished sternly, and of course, my boss was right. Here you have the Attorney General, the number one law enforcement officer for the entire United States of America, having a private 30-minute meeting on an airplane with an individual who is potentially a witness or maybe even a target, because when you look at the Clinton Foundation, this is Bill Clinton's baby, isn't it? This is where we are today. The madness doesn't end. Awards for people that obstruct agents desperately racing the clock to prevent the next terrorist attack. The Attorney General meeting with the former president, and his wife is under investigation for commission of felonies, for jeopardizing national security, for corruption involving the Clinton Foundation. I wonder what my bosses would have thought if they were a witness to that, if they thought it was a nightmare that I had dessert with a lawyer and I didn't have any matters pending with him, and all I was a lowly field agent. Trainee, in fact. I still hadn't been through the training program yet. And here you have Loretta Lynch, someone who should know better, and I know people who know Lynch, and they told me that when they worked with her, FBI agents and customs agents, they said she was great to work with, but I have to call into question her judgment. This is the woman who, when she was having her confirmation hearing, initially said that she thought everybody had the right to work in the United States, and good old Chuck Schumer took her to lunch and straightened her out. You know, remember, the U.S. attorneys have to be the ones involved in the process of punishing employers of illegal aliens, cute aliens who provide false identities or make statements that are fraudulent, because all prosecutors answer to her. She sets the tone. She also sets the tone for the FBI. For all the talk about how Comey is an independent sort of guy, he does have a boss. And his boss is Loretta Lynch. I have never in my life seen our government fall this low as it has now. This is crazy stuff. And we can't get these images out of our mind, and we certainly must not get these images out of our mind on Election Day. I can't tell you how strongly I feel about it. And now we come to this attack in Turkey, and I'm saving perhaps, I won't say the best for last. There's nothing best here today. There is no good news. I would love to be able to say to you, folks, we have great news. Our government is doing what it's supposed to be doing. They're looking out for America and Americans, and they're protecting us. I wish I could say it. The opposite has been happening, and Americans understand it. May not understand the nuts and bolts of what is being done, not for us, but to us. But the stench is so bad that I think the dead can smell this one. And, you know, there's a Yiddish expression that says that when the fish goes bad, it smells from the head. The head is rotted, very rotted. Daily Mail ran a headline, and this was yesterday, actually. Was one-armed Chechen warlord behind Istanbul airport attack? That's the headline from the Daily Mail. Bearded terror mastermind fled Russia 12 years ago before settling in Turkey, as ISIS recruiter security services say. Now, this is the issue. This guy, Ahmed Chateyev, is said to be the brains behind the Istanbul airport massacre. I'm reading the next line on that headline. He was a convicted arms smuggler. Smuggler. There's only one way to describe a smuggler. That is a person who moves people or merchandise across international borders illegally. And they talk about him settling in Turkey from Russia. He crossed the Russian border into Turkey, or crossed the Turkish border into Turkey, where he set up shop 12 years ago, this smuggler, this ISIS recruiter, this mastermind. Do you understand that in order to attack us, as the 9/11 Commission report noted, they have to be able to get here first? They have to cross our borders. In fact, the 9/11 Commission, and I've quoted this before, but I am compelled this evening, I'm compelled this evening to report on this again. The preface of the 9/11 Commission's staff report on terrorist travel. Think of the name of this report. And this was the staff that worked with and for the 9/11 Commission. These were federal agents and government lawyers. And they recognized the movement of these terrorists around the world was critical for them to be able to carry out their attacks. So they wrote a separate report apart from the 9/11 report. And by the way, the 9/11 Commission report has many statements about the concerns about passports and movement and travel and border security and all this business. But here the commission itself said, we want to be crystal clear and lock this down so that there's no doubt in anybody's mind, even as we are now expanding the visa waiver program. And in fact, they noticed that what they're trying to do in Russia is to get a hold of people with European passports. Why do you think they want European passports? Because of the EU, which is why England bailed out. They're gone. We're celebrating our independence this weekend, so are Brits. And the visa waiver program, which has been pushed on us by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, I call them the U.S. Chamber of Horrors, is taking away from us a vital layer of security, and it also protects airplanes. Because if you can't get on an you can't get on an airplane if you need a visa at your country of destination. So people like the shoe bomber and other terrorists who came from England and Europe could not have boarded those airplanes if they had needed visas. But under the visa waiver program, they were able to get on board those airplanes without a visa. This is dangerous. But the Chamber of Commerce doesn't care how many people they kill. And after all, funeral homes are businesses. Maybe they're trying to drum up business for funeral homes. But I want you, as you think about this guy who was the mastermind of that brutal attack at that airport in Turkey, Atatürk Airport, think of this statement. This is the preface of the 9/11 Commission's staff report on terrorist travel. It is perhaps obvious to state that terrorists cannot plan and carry out attacks in the United States if they are unable to enter the country. That's the issue, if they are unable to enter the country. Yet prior to September 11, while there were efforts to enhance border security, no agency of the U.S. government thought of border security as a tool in the counterterrorism arsenal. Indeed, even after 19 hijackers demonstrated the relative ease of obtaining a U.S. visa and gaining admission into the United States, border security still is not considered a cornerstone of national security policy. We believe, for reasons that we discuss in the following pages, that it must be made one. The visa process needed to be tightened up. We had 26 visa waiver countries on 9/11. Today, thanks to the Chamber of Commerce and corrupt politicians and this wacky administration and the Bush administration before it, we now have 38 visa waiver countries. George W. added countries to that list, and Mr. Obama certainly has added more countries to that list, and they're trying to add still more. And this notion of giving people who are here illegally, who snuck into the country, this word undocumented is bunk. They are uninspected. We called it entry without inspection when I was an agent. We don't know when they got here. We don't know who they are. We don't know anything about their backgrounds. And the numbers are so huge, folks, there will be no interviews. There will be no field investigations. We will be giving out identity documents with no way of knowing who in blazes we're giving out those identity documents. And I got news for you. Hillary's been jumping up and down and saying, yeah, I'm going to do it immediately. 45 days and I'm going to do it. And you have Republicans agreeing with her, the same people that oppose Donald Trump. How in the world do you justify that? No interview, no field investigation. So the big debate is whether or not we only, quote unquote, only give them the permission to work. That permission to work is an official identity document that they can use as a breeder document. What does that mean? They can take that magic card that immigration would give them. They could immediately get a Social Security card. They can immediately get driver's licenses and credit cards. They can get jobs that, even if they don't have national security implications, might well have critical infrastructure implications, perhaps working in food processing plants, perhaps working in schools, wherever. Think where terrorists want to attack, the damage they want to do, the lives they want to take, and the more violently, the better. And these documents that the Republicans who oppose Donald Trump are willing to hand out like candy. Like candy. They are our death warrants in the hands of a terrorist. In fact, with all the talk about guns, why doesn't someone mention the fact that the 9/11 Commission said that in the hands of a terrorist, a passport is a weapon? In the hands of a terrorist, a passport is a weapon. And here's the issue. This comes from page 47 of that report, the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. Once terrorists had entered the United States, their next challenge was to find a way to remain here. Their primary method was immigration fraud. For example, Yusuf and Ajaj concocted bogus political asylum stories when they arrived in the United States. Mahmoud Abu Alima, involved in both the World Trade Center and Landmark plots, received temporary residence under the Seasonal Agriculture Worker Program, which was an amnesty program, folks. It was part of the Reagan amnesty, after falsely claiming he picked beans in Florida. And then they go on to page 98 and they say this. Terrorists in the 1990s, as well as the September 11th hijackers, needed to find a way to stay in or embed themselves in the United States if their operational plans were to come to fruition. As already discussed, this could be accomplished legally by marrying an American citizen, achieving temporary worker status, or applying for asylum after entering. In many cases, the act of filing for an immigration benefit sufficed to permit the alien to remain in the country until the petition was adjudicated. Terrorists were free to conduct surveillance, coordinate operations, obtain and receive funding, go to school and learn English, make contacts in the United States, acquire necessary materials, and execute an attack. Pretty clear, isn't it? And just 2 weeks ago, or less, John Brennan, the director of the Central Intelligence Agency, the CIA, before a Senate intelligence hearing, boy, there's an oxymoron, and said that he was concerned that ISIS was growing in its ferocity and its abilities to carry out attacks, and that his concern was that the three ways they would come here is in refugee flows, by using smugglers, or through normal courses of travel. And I found it remarkable that just yesterday or the day before yesterday, O'Reilly on his program was spouting his usual, and what did O'Reilly have to say? Oh, Trump is wrong. The refugees, they're not, the terrorists aren't coming as refugees. They could just overstay a visa. I love a guy who knows nothing about a topic but decides to get on the air where he can influence millions of people with wrong ideas. You know, the only thing worse than not providing information at all is providing wrong information. The reason that these people want to use refugee flows, number one, to conceal themselves, but number two, as refugees, they become entitled to get that suite of documents, the breeder documents, so they can immediately start to work. They can drive vehicles, and almost always the terrorists depend on vehicles for camouflage and mobility, and that means driver's licenses. I just wish that the talking heads on TV would allow people to come on their program who truly understand the issue, rather than to pontificate from the throne of the television studio set. When people say things like, oh, if these people have been living here for X number of years, the problem is these illegal aliens use multiple false identities. There's no capacity to do a field investigation. So whatever they claim will be the date that they entered the United States will be the date that the adjudications offices will have to take as truthful. This undermines our national security. This is crazy. This is truly crazy. Please get involved with the process, folks. Try to share as much information as you can with your neighbors. I call this my bucket brigade of truth. We live in a very perilous era. We are at crossroads. As we celebrate America's independence, we need to be mindful of the threats that America and America faces. I thank you so much for joining me on my program. I look forward to our conversations every Friday at the end of the week. But I ask you to please remember that democracy is not a spectator sport. Please get involved. And please have the guts of your conviction. Stand up to the bullies who make these false claims. The difference between an immigrant and an illegal alien is comparable to the difference between a house guest and a burglar. See you next week.